further, but one of the things that I wanted to ask you about was, you never seem to have been involved in that kind of sectarianism.
Well, is that, no, I really wasn't. And the group I was with, you know, we had very little of that. Now, the group I was with were all Fulano. And
the group back in Colorado?
Yes. We supported Lano. And I thought it was a wonderful thing. And I still don't agree with this article, because I think it's wonderful to attempt to anything, even no matter... You see, what destroyed Lano was the wall coming down, and they couldn't get anything. They couldn't get any support. And then some of the people who went in there really went in to destroy.
But I was especially curious. You may, if you'd like, I'll leave these with you. You might want to look through them. But I was especially curious because you had talked so well about Yano, the fact that there was that kind of thing.
Yes, I thought it was a wonderful thing. I thought it was a wonderful thing. People of like mind getting together. I believe in cooperation. I believe in cooperatives. I really believe in them. I think, of course, it doesn't solve the question, but it's a part of the remedy of the right now to meet people's needs. And I think it's a fine thing. There's no nothing. I can't agree with that at all. And I think they're very bigoted and show a lack of understanding of the whole thing.
Well, I think their language is rather astounding.
Yeah.
The way they attack. Well, that's one of the things I want to deal with today, is the development of that group of people in Denver. Because I think we've covered how you became involved after Dorothy was a year old. You felt that now the children are old enough, and as a protest against the war, you joined the Socialist Party. I want to go into, really, what the group was like, what some of your beliefs were, and then the reaction 2 years later to the Russian Revolution, and then eventually the formation of the Communist Party group in Denver. So I don't know quite where you'd like to begin, maybe with...
Well, see, when the Russian Revolution came, there was a tremendous support for it. Almost every group, you know, really. It's only very few of them that stood out like that. I think the Socialist Labor Party didn't support it. As far as I know, as far as I can remember, but the Socialist Party, that branch of it that I belonged to, did support it wholeheartedly. And I remember the anarchists supported it and celebrated it, went all over and everything. It was a wonderful thing, you know. Then, when the Communist Party was formed, well, you see, the very guy that we sent as a delegate to the Chicago to form this Communist Party was an agent of the Department of Justice.
He's the one that gave over the name String of Thomas.
Yes.
Well, backing up a little bit, Barbara, how many people were in this? It seems to have been a fairly intimate group.
Yes.
Of socialists.
Yes.
So about how large was the group?
As far as I can remember, and my memory isn't too good about that, I think as far as I can remember, there were about 40.
Mm-hmm. And these were all, did your whole social life then revolve around this group of people?
Most of it did. Even my children made friends with them. And they accepted those who didn't have children, accepted my children. Mm-hmm. Like Helen Dietrich, never had the, she loved my children.
So very early it became, your social and political life really messed with each other.
That's right. And at that time, see, what I did then is I spoke about socialism to everyone I met. I felt really, to carry the truth about socialism was very important. How did they know? All my neighbors and a group, and strange to say, because really and truly I had much to learn about it, you know, but the little that I knew, I was so overwhelmed with it that this was the answer, that I felt that I had to talk to everyone, and all our neighbors knew I was a socialist, and I got... I goes in the voting thing. I said, you know, of course I know they tell you who to vote for, but you still try to choose the one who is the best of all, because it won't come all in one thing, you know. So try, and I really did. You see, one thing, I liked people, and they felt that I liked them, and I never blasted any of them. But I said, you see, they keep us ignorant of these things, because if we knew, would we suffer it? So you see, the thing is that we have to understand it and use every method to expose them and see what they're doing. And in most of my neighborhood, people who read very little of the vote, the socialist ticket, they voted for Debs. Yes, they voted for Debs. You see, he got almost 1 million votes, you know, because one thing, he was an honest guy. He wasn't a communist, but he was a real socialist. Mm-hmm. And they admired and liked him for the stand he took. He was the highly principled. Clarence Darrow was never a communist, but he practiced socialist ideas.
Well, Bob, but before the Russian Revolution, in terms of your group and your socialist ideas, did you see, in this country, did you think that a violent revolution was necessary? This is still before 1917. How did you think that socialism would be accomplished?
I never thought of it in terms of violence. Mm-hmm. I thought of it, you know, when they asked Marx at the end of the Communist Manifesto about violence, he said, we do not advocate violence, but if they violently try to stop us, we will have to answer with violence to gain our end, but we don't advocate it. And we don't initiate it. They are the ones, and that's true. So I never really believed in violence. Mm-hmm.
But I did
believe, though, that if the counter-revolution, the exercise, you defend yourself, mm-hmm, and use every means that you, there's no question of it, you have to.
Well, in those early days when there was really a larger group of radicals and there seemed to be much more opportunity for change, did you feel that the revolution was around the corner?
No, I never felt that, but I felt that it wasn't going to take as long as it is now. You know, see, when Dorothy spoke at Irvine and the questions were asked to her, she said, you see, the mistake we made, that we thought an economic democracy had come to the Soviet Union, the people automatically changed with it. But alas, we found that just isn't true. For deep are the roots of the other, and it may take you perhaps a century before you get to add that.
But way back when you first became a socialist, you thought that within your lifetime you would see a socialist revolution in this country?
I thought it was possible. But I don't remember that I was too sanguine, mm-hmm, knowing how deep, and the more I read of the capitalist system, how it had protected in every way. And then when I read that we were, well, at first, you see, when I went to school, I said, America was the land of the free and the home of the brave. But then I found out, you know, that America was really doing all over, interfering with people, and bringing about the very things that they had fought against, I began to have stand hope of it. And I saw how their power was growing, what they were doing over there. And then even the unions, because the unions, I felt, was very necessary. And how, see, the first time that I read of any terrible anti-union was the homestead. Well, that was a horrible thing, that they came and just murdered them, you know. They shot them down in cold blood. And in 1935, when the strikers, the strikers, well, they turned the guns on them. So I wasn't that sure, but I never dreamt that in Russia a Stalin could come to power.
Well, when the war came, did did you feel, the First World War, when you actually joined the Socialist Party after the beginning of the war, though, did you feel that this might be the eve of socialism?
No, I could see from then, you know, that it was a jingoist thing, you know. And I thought that I saw if they could, that is to talk about it and everything, that there was too few people really knew about socialism, and too many were supporting the war, mm-hmm. you see. And that, I was always opposed to war. Mm-hmm.
Well, did you, in that very early period then, did you and your friends, it sounds like you were involved basically in electoral politics and attempting to educate people through elective procedures to accomplish change. Was this part of your ideology?
It was really part of my ideology, because the little blue books that were printed in Chicago by, I don't remember now, mm-hmm. I thought they were marvelous, because in simple terms they showed you what capitalism was, and in simple terms, what socialism was. And I thought they were marvelous. And I thought education was the most important thing. People had to understand and believe in something and support it. And that's the only way they will stop supporting a system that is so corrupt. Because a system that sanctions war and whose aims are attained to it. And we went to other countries too, you know. And especially Wilson, I told you that my father voted for Benson, the socialist candidate. I saw what a hypocrite he was, because Wilson was a very clever demagogue. He said, when someone called his attention that Washington had said that we shouldn't become involved in foreign affairs, just that he said, well, that's only a scrap of paper. And then, you know, he said words were meant to conceal a thought as well as to reveal it. And there are things you gain by concealing it. So he went along with all those things. Then proud neutrality, mm-hmm. too proud to fight, then the war for democracy. I thought he was a very unprincipled guy. Now, the peace without victory was a good thing. The 14 points of self-determination for all nations. But you see, it wasn't until many, many years later when I read Winston Sheehan's personal history that I found out what went down at Versailles and the policeman and everything, how Clemenceau took the Wilson and just shook him and called him pig, because he did really try to have some of that. So as he was not only a Princeton professor, but really thought he could help in this way, and then most of it. See, his own country wouldn't accept the League of Nations, and it broke his heart.
But did you see socialism in this country, still before the Russian Revolution happened, as being something that would be brought about through the electoral process?
Well, no, I knew better than that. I knew that it couldn't be that it couldn't be. But I did think that education for the workers, I thought the unions might help in that. But the unions became very corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
But I did think the unions were the first step toward it, mm-hmm. to see that an organization of, and especially an organization of workers in unions, in fighting for the present, were also projecting the future.
Now, then, of this group of about 40 or so socialists, what was the background of most of the others?
Well, you know, a few of them were workers, but several of them were, one had a little furniture store, one had, many of them were in the really middle class. They were not all workers.
How many of them were Jews or foreign-born?
I would say that half of them were foreign-born.
And were the foreign-born primarily Jews also? Or were there a lot of Germans?
There were a few Germans, but predominantly they were Jews.
Mm-hmm. And now you were in one, you had your own Socialist Party group, and you were tied to the Socialist Party itself at that time.
Yes.
And did you distribute the call? Was that the people's call?
No, the call, I think, was more or less in San Francisco. I don't think it had very much of a thing. I can't even remember just exactly. But whatever social visits came, I did see it all. And you know, when the leaflets put out, even if I died, I never sacrificed one leaflet. I distributed every one of them.
Where would you usually try and distribute them?
Generally in mining towns or steel workers, generally where most of the workers were really engaged in industry.
So the appeal was primarily to the workers?
Absolutely, yes.
And, would you go out on your own to distribute them, or would several of you?
No, generally I went with someone else, but I'll tell you what happened once. And I went with Dorothy, and this was in 1930. I went with Dorothy and Gordon, who was one of the heads of the Communist Party then, to a little town called Pittsburgh. That was the steel town in...
up near the level
there? Yes. And we each had, I've got now about 250 leaflets to distribute. And there was there, you know, and the only thing that afterward I thought of, my husband had just come back, you know, see, he would be gone 6 weeks and be only home about 12 days. And he had come home just the day before. So the thing I thought, now what if they arrest me? I don't even know what name to give, that they would know. But this wasn't a very good arrangement. We should have been. So do you know, the police were everywhere around. And I distributed every one of those leaflets. Dorothy and Gordon threw theirs into the gutter there somewhere when they saw the police were there. But I wouldn't go until I had... And one place where I had gone and talked to the man, you know, and he said, well, wait just a moment. And I heard him go and pick up the phone and say, there's a woman around here that's sitting in these here. And so I vanished right away. But I went around to the alleyway and distributed every one of them. And I didn't come back to the car that was waiting then. I said, did you get rid of yours? And he said, no, you threw them away. I said, how dare you throw away what people have paid for and everything. But the police were right on our track. Because what good would it do? They would just arrest us. But I distributed every one of them.
How about in the earlier days in Colorado? Where would you distribute the leaflets?
In the earlier days in Colorado, you know, the funny thing is, you know how Germany became the arch enemy afterwards? In Colorado at the beginning, the Turnhaller, the Turnverein, was the Germans. They were the most progressive of all. And we would distribute in that. Also, of course, we tried to go where industry was. But the Germans, that was one of our meeting places. When you couldn't get any other place, they could always go there.
Sure.
And they were always comrades.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Comrade.
Now, of these 40 people then, when when there was a split in the Socialist Party itself over support of the war, what happened within your small group?
Well, see, this group of 40 people all went for the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
They sanctioned the Communist Party. The other socialist groups, you know, the anti, they stayed that way. But really and truly, the Socialist Labor Party was never really for it either, you know.
And what was your relationship to the other socialist groups, like the Socialist Labor
well,
Party?
Well, see, there began to be in the Communist Party too, but not to be friendly. But I never accepted that. I thought that they're still, no matter how, I think they're mistaken, but I was always friendly with all of them. And I thought nobody is going to tell me who I can or cannot talk to. That isn't why I became a socialist, to be told that this is for both men, this not.
So this group of 40 then is a group that kind of stayed, that you first joined with and that stuck together too.
Yes.
Now, when you first joined, there were others besides the 40 though, and then they went with the other wing of the Socialist Party, or did the whole group in Denver stay with the group?
Well, in this case, this whole group really stayed with there. Now there was, I won't say that everyone was committed to the same degree, but more or less they were.
Mm-hmm.
But what really caused that terrible thing was that when they discovered that Intiman was an agent of the Department of Justice, that this was a terrible thing, because almost all the foreign-born, 80 of them, were arrested, so you see, and many of them were not even members of the Communist Party. They had just attended the meeting.
Well, Barbara, can you tell me a little, well, first, before you split off and joined the Communist Party, how was the group structured, your Socialist Party group? Did you have officers or what?
Yes, we did have. We had this was Intiman, was the secretary of the party. We had, we had an educationer of the group, the head of the educational department, and also of the distribution department for distributed things and everything. Yes, they had offices and everything, but very few of them were paid.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost all voluntary.
Was anybody paid as a party person?
Very few that I can remember. Sometimes they paid transportation for them. But I remember in our home how many slept there on the floor even, you know, and everything. And because that's one thing, you know.
This is people who were passing through?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Did you hold office in the social, and this is still the social
I never
part?
Did.
Mm-hmm.
Never did. I was always a Jimmy Higgins. I carried out, but I never really felt that I knew enough to, and I never wanted to. When I was often a delegate for things, you know. I remember once when I was a delegate and they're having an anti-war meeting, and, you know, loyalty.
Oh, this is in the 30s then?
This was in the 30s. Yorty was a member of the American League Against War and Fascism. That's when I first met him. At that time, he was supposed to be quite radical. And he was sitting next to me. He was also a delegate. And then I got up and I said, I want to make a resolution. I want to have a resolution passed that we sponsor to abolish all profits in war. And Yorty put me down. He said, Bobby, you can't do that because the party won't like it. I said, why? Aren't we for that? He said, yes, but, you know, you might have to need it, and you can't do it. And I was just absolutely appalled at it. How could anybody be against it? I don't care. And I thought this was in the party that you had to expose it. So.
Well, Barbara, then, when the Russian Revolution then occurred, most of you, this whole coterie that you belong to all supported it.
Yes.
What effect did you think it would have on socialism in the United States?
I think at that time it had a tremendous effect on the means of the United States. Of course, many of the socialists were not prepared because, you know, a socialist like Norman Thomas, who was the head of the Socialist Party, you know, well, he decried it, that he always talked of the violence, and really there was much less violence than was practiced by the other side and everything. But I was always friends with Washington. I never stopped being a friend of anyone because he didn't go along just the way I did and everything. But in that respect, Dorothy was a thing, you know, when the 22 first left the Communist Party here, and they were our most devoted people. Celeste Strauss, my God, she was the spokesman and everything, a brilliant person. And she kept that. So when the Communist Party said, well, how can you be friends? She said, they haven't become enemies because they're out of the party. They're still friends. She said, perhaps they find that they can't carry on that way, but they haven't become enemies.
So you never got involved in any of those kinds of factional or sectarian kinds of disputes?
Not particularly, because I really hated that kind of a thing, you know, and just wouldn't have anything to do with it.
Right after the Russian Revolution, there was tremendous reaction amongst, especially in Seattle, where they formed Soviets of various kinds.
Oh, yes. Well, we supported them. Oh, we supported the Seattle guys and sent them money, sent the aid and everything, and sent a delegate to them, too. We supported them with all our hearts. I don't remember anyone who ever spoke against them.
But there was nothing on a smaller scale in your area like that, what happened in Seattle. Mm-hmm.
Well, there might have been picket lines against some of the big guys, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't have an organization like that in Seattle.
Now, of the 40 people, how many of them were women?
I would say more than half the women.
And how common was it for the woman to be involved, but not her husband?
Well, amongst our group, most of them were both involved. But there were a few cases because my husband wasn't involved and I was and everything. But, you know, the funny thing is, that although I was a delegate for many, many times, I never held any kind of office. I never wanted to.
Well, how about the other women?
Some of them did. Now, Helen Dietrich was a secretary, and she also had a beautiful voice. She led the singing. Now, that one thing that we had then that I think was really beautiful, we started every meeting with a song, with a revolutionary song.
What kind of song?
Well, a great many times it was the International, and then the Red Flag. Those two were sung very, very often. But afterward, then from the Soviet Union came some of the other songs. We loved them all.
Do you think that the thing about the songs was because of the early wobbly influence?
I don't know if the wobbly influence had anything to do with it, but the songs I think were important because they allowed something that was really tremendous. Well, just like even when Hitler, when the peat bog soldiers, or when Spain was invaded, you know, I think the songs were really tremendous.
As morale boosters for you?
Yes, yes, and a feeling of solidarity with the people. I think the songs were very important.
How were the women generally, I'm still talking about the Socialist Party now before the Communist Labor Party was formed. How were the women viewed by the men in the group?
Well, I wish I could say that they all practiced equality. They didn't, because the men could always, you know, and the women always, if they had children, they were restricted in it. And more or less, you know, it was still, most of them, they in higher positions or anything, were men, you know. But there were a few women, you know. Look at Kate Richards or Hale. But, oh, she was a tremendous person. She'd have risen anywhere.
It was just a few individual women who rose like that.
That's right.
On the whole, the women were viewed the way they were in the rest of society then.
Well, never quite that much, because they did speak up.
Mm-hmm.
See, the only time that I was ever arrested was, and that was already in 1929 or 30, it had been a protest against labor leaders, you know, where we were. And then they asked me to speak before a Young Women's Christian Association. And Carol Jean, at that time, my youngest was 3 years old, I was really terrified. I'd never, you know, I'd been at one of those speaking at street corners, you know, but that was different. But speak before that, I was really terrified. And then I said, well, what do I say? Well, just tell them what happened to you and why you were there. We can't tell you what to say. You were there. You experienced it. You just tell them what. So, you know, I'll never forget when I got up to speak, and I just automatically took Carol Jean's hand and up the platform with me. And then I said to them, you know, as I came up here, I was really terrified because I'm not a speaker. But you don't have to be a speaker to, and some of you I know will say, you never saw police attack anyone. But did you ever go to a meeting where there would have been anything like that? I never did. And then I remembered that what was his name, who opposed the wall, and when Emerson came to see him.
Thoreau.
Yeah, Thoreau. Thoreau said when he opposed the wall, he said he did not believe in without representation, and he did not believe in the wall against Mexico. And when Ralph came to see him, he said, what are you doing here, Henry? He says, what I want to know is what you're doing out there. And I still feel that way. If all of you had experienced any of this, had gone to this was only a labor meeting, but they have a right to organize. And if we do not speak up for them, who's going to speak up for us? If we do not, when Jefferson said, eternal riches is the price of liberty, and while you slept, your liberties were taken from you. Is that not true, that we do have to be eternally vigilant? So whatever we have gained of the thing that we want is a thing that has to be guarded very, very zealously. And if we do not speak up, and then, you see, it was at that time that I read Freedom by James Russell Lowell.
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember when he closes the last paragraph? He says, they are slaves who dare not choose hatred, scoffing, and abuse. Rather than in silence shrink from the truth they need testing, they are slaves who dare not be in the right of two or three. Well, to my utter surprise, I was kind of quivery about it. I got a really, really applause. And, I was so grateful. I just felt I loved every one of them. They were so nice.
But you mentioned that you had done soapbox speaking.
Yes, I often did. Only when the speaker failed or was arrested.
Mm-hmm.
But I really never volunteered to speak at the... But then they... Because I was, you know... Everyone knew there that I read a lot,
mm-hmm.
and that therefore I knew something of the subject and everything.
Now, but Barbara, this is all later. This is after you came to Oakland, wasn't it, you're talking about now?
Earlier,
we started talking about the way the women were treated within in Denver, within the group. Did the women themselves have a self-consciousness among themselves as a group about being women, and had any consciousness about how they were being treated differently, do you think, in your group?
I think a few had, but not very many, because if they really... See, I can't say that it was really conscious, because if any woman showed that she really wanted to aspire to it, she was not held back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there were women in the movement, you know, and... those who really wanted to assume a more active part, they were not held back.
Mm-hmm. But within your group, then, there wasn't that much of an identity among the women themselves because of their similar situation.
No, it wasn't the women's lib.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Within some groups, I mean, there were people like, of course she was an anarchist, but there were other women who were involved in radicalism in those days who were at the same time concerned about women's
Well, you see, there were only a very few who stood out, like Elizabeth Gurley Flynn, who always did, you know, and she was in the IWW at that time, you know. And Emma Goldman, who was not liked or admired by many people. The people I knew in the party, or in the Socialist Party, who knew Emma Goldman despised her. Said she was a very elegant and domineering person and didn't like her. She was really unscrupulous, too.
She was, in what way?
Well, you see, one of the things that I don't know why she wanted it, many times, you know, if she took a fancy to somebody's husband, she had no scruples, and because she was a brilliant woman and in the limelight of getting them away, and then said, how can you do this? She said, she didn't possess him, and I didn't come in and just forcibly take him away. But if he came, it was because he didn't find in her what he wanted. And I thought that was, you see, I still had some of these things. Someone would have said these were bourgeois morals. But I suppose I still had some of them. I didn't admire it, but she thought because of her influence as a brilliant woman, as a woman in the, that she could do that to anybody else.
But so she and Elizabeth Gurley Flynn really stand out quite distinct from many of the other women involved in socialist politics in their concern so much with women's causes. Within your group, most of the women didn't see women's causes as being separate.
Well, you see, Elizabeth Gurley Flynn, I think, did more than anyone, you know. When the strikes took place of the workers, even in Gastonia and everything, you know, see, they tried to encourage the women, the porters, the women who were shot dead and everything. I forget now.
Yes, I do too. I know who you mean.
Yeah, but you know, she was a lovely person, but you see, she had really known nothing about these things, and suddenly she became a flame, you know, and through her poetry expressed what was happening and everything, and she was killed, and there was a great deal of, but that also was already the 28th or 29th and 30th, you know, already, you know, so there was a lot of that. But a lot of it was really in union activity, in workers' activity. Most of it was the struggle to establish a union. Remember, it was about that time, too, that Ford, you know, they shot four workers who were trying to join the union. And you had to be absolutely terrified if anything, that you belonged to the union or were advocating a union and everything.
Barbara, tell me about the formation of the, at the time, I guess, it was the Communist Labor Party, wasn't it, that you first formed?
Yes, yes.
Tell me a little bit about the formation of the group in Denver there.
Well, it was pretty much the same group, you know, who had, and I think the change that came about was really not from Denver, but from Chicago, that, they really were more or less of the controlling voice in Chicago, the head of the Communist Party. When they changed from the Communist Labor Party to the Communist Party.
Well, how did your group, did the Socialist Party group have a meeting and decide that they wanted to join the, how did it work out?
Well, when it first came, they were the Communist Labor Party, they all joined the Communist Labor Party. And then just simply changed the thing to Communist Party. Oh, they only changed the name, that's all.
Oh, I see. Did you have any kind of... Because you mentioned at one point a meeting in Helen Dietrich's basement when you formed the Communist Party.
You see, when it was the Communist Labor Party, they thought it was restricted, more or less, anyone except that they were in the labor movement. And they thought that it was not the best thing, you know. They had to have a broader base than that. The Communist Party itself then was formed a broader base for anyone who was fighting. It took a long time, too, that they had a kind of a fetish that if you were a worker, you became a kind of a... And that sometimes upset me because I thought... I remember once speaking, I said, look, the labor, the working people, when they once understand and stand for, they'll be important. But right now, it's the workers who are the stool pigeons, the workers who are the scabs. So just being a worker doesn't mean anything unless he has a social understanding.
Well, that was pretty heretical to say something like that, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It was.
What
yes.
Sort of
I remember, well, of course, you know, they were very scornful of it. They didn't like it, you know. They said that I sounded really more like a bourgeois libertarian than anything else. And I said, but these are the facts. Look who are. I said, even Marx spoke in the manifesto of the lumpen proletariat. Well, the lumpen proletariat were part of the proletariat, and the lumpen was that they were so ignorant and they were the deadening mass. But they were there. They were part of the workers, not of the aristocracy. They were part of the workers. And he warned you against them. So, well, you see, even after ideals are established, there's a lot of friction because people will accept so much and they're limited by, just like I couldn't understand how we all accepted Stalin killing so many. I told you about the time that when Dorothy came home and Ricky was about 14 or 15, I don't know, and she said, what are you reading? He was an omnivorous reader. And he said, I've been reading The Mandarin. She said, well, I don't know if that would have been a book I select for a 15-year-old. What did you think of it? He said, well, what section? He said, there was the sexual thing, there was the economic, there was the socialist thing. She said, well, what did you think of the sexual? He says, I didn't give a damn. I wasn't interested in who was sleeping with whom. I didn't give a damn about that. But what I want to know is, when anyone came and told you, the French Communist Party people came and told you what Stalin was doing, what did you do about it? He says, you didn't believe it. You didn't believe it when the French Communists were telling you that? No. He said, then you deserve what you got, if you couldn't believe it. And I remember that some of my comrades, when I began to denounce Stalin, they thought that I had, well, even...
How early would this have been, Barbara?
Well, this was really already in the 30s.
This was before the big trial?
No, it was during the